Joining us now, the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Chris Johnston. What's happening, CJ?
There's a lot of chaos in the universe right now, it feels like. I'm not sure what's going on. But
do you like it, CJ? Do you like the chaos, or are you just like kind of plodding along and not bothering people?
I'm trying not to participate in the chaos, if that's what you're getting at. But no, I don't like it. I mean, I don't like a day like yesterday and today because it's a lot of people losing their jobs. And, you know, obviously we talk about this for a living, but, you know, there's not a good day in a lot of those households, I'm guessing, when you get fired in public the way it has to be in the NHL.
Yeah. Well, in Vancouver, you don't see this very often where it's like a sweeping change. Like everyone's out 20, 25 games in. It's, you know, the Travis Green, I'm sure Travis knew 10 games ago, 15 games ago, it's just a matter of time. That said, he just signed his extension. Like he just locked it in over the course of the offseason. But for the GM to go, the assistant GM, the head coach, the assistant coach, that is a significant overhaul. I don't recall the last time we saw that happen, CJ.
Well, it's maybe back to like when Brendan Shanahan was in Toronto, was the closest. Remember at the end of the one season, they basically cleared out the coaching staff and the rest of the front office. You know, that's when Kyle Dubas and Brandon Pridham were hired that offseason, and you know, a bunch of other changes were made. But you're right, it is unusual. It's especially unusual to have it during the season. I think it became more likely the longer this went on unaddressed. I mean, you know, the fact that Travis Green wasn't replaced 10 games ago, I think, you know, told you that ownership didn't have the confidence in allowing Jim Benning to do that, because certainly Benning had Claude Julien and a few other coaches at least on his radar and was checking in on their availability, but ultimately wasn't, you know, in a position where he's able to hire them. And so if the GM doesn't have the owner's trust for that, then obviously it's just going to be something larger. And I think it'll be interesting now just to see how it develops with the Sedins in particular. You know, how significant their role will be. It's, you know, pretty clear it'll be much more than it is today, I think, that they'll have, you know, an increased presence in that front office. But, you know, I think it's probably going to be some time. I mean, now they're going to manage by committee. You know, obviously, Bruce Boudreau's a known quantity as a coach in terms of trying to turn the results around on the ice and probably get to really, you know, revamping the front office in the offseason.
Yeah, I guess, and I don't know what you're supposed to do if you're in Vancouver, because they've committed so much money to players who I think are good players. Elias Pettersson's been awful, but he's better than this, and he's young.
Hazy, what about the other guy that they brought in there? Like, Ekman Larson, I always held at a high standard, like one of the top defensemen. I watched a bunch of Van, and I just watch him out there, and he's just a guy out there. I'm like, what the hell happened to that guy?
Right.
Like, was he just in Arizona Coyote mode where he's like, I'm not going to get in shape? There was video of him training camp wheeling around out there. I don't know what the hell he was doing. But how did he just drop off and show up in Vancouver and be an average guy? It's like,
and now you're stuck with him. That's the point.
No kidding.
Like, what? I think it's like serious excavation out there in Vancouver. But you got to be careful, because if you like Pettersson, you like Horvat, you like Hughes, you like Demko. Like, I think there's a makings of a pretty good core potentially there, Chris, but it's everything around it that is just decaying and yet has potential to be really difficult to remove because of the contract status.
Well, and whoever comes in has to be real honest about, like, what the window is and you know, how much time it's going to take to build the right players around those players. And if you don't have the time where you think those will still be high-performing players, then you know, you're talking about maybe moving a core piece or two out and really doing the rebuild again. You know, I'm with you. I think it's going to be an incredibly difficult job. They kind of replaced bad contracts and bad decisions with more bad decisions in a way. They were, you know, moving around the deck chairs on the Titanic a little bit. And, you know, I think they're going to be better. I mean, Bruce Boudreau's, I think he's a great coach actually and pretty good record actually of him turning around teams too. And so now that these changes have been made, you know, we'll probably see some better results on the ice, but you know, the season's already lost and, you know, I don't know what the plan is next year when, you know, presumably you've got a new front office making that call.
Yeah,
CJ, do you think that Daniel and Henrik will step right in and start dealing with this disaster?
It's not really in their nature, is it? Right. I mean, I think of them as,
I wouldn't want to do it.
Well, no, I mean, look at you. I don't know how much they're worried about their legacy, but you know, it's a dangerous spot to be in when the organization is in this position where I would argue they're not probably in a position to succeed just with not a lot of front office experience. You know, they got people around them there to help with that. But, you know, I think to me, and I believe I mentioned this 2 weeks ago on our hit, but like someone like Jim Rutherford makes a lot of sense at the top of that organization. Like, I think if you put in someone who's been everywhere, seen everything at the top, you know, allow them to work with whoever you want, you know, in the GM's chairs, whatever the roles are called beneath him. Yeah, I think that that's where you might find some stability and start, you know, working towards getting out of this. But it just doesn't look like a quick fix for anyone. And I think it's respected as Daniel Hendricks are, as smart as I think they are, as much as they care. You know, I think that they understand that there's still more time needed around seeing how this stuff works before you're really the one in the seat making those kind of calls.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider. The Leafs are going to be facing some issues here because I think Rasmus Sandin, at a minimum, is going to be out for a while. I mean, hopefully he didn't just completely blow his knee out. But
I heard 2 to 3 weeks for him.
Okay, so what would that suggest? Charlie Horse knee sprain? He must have dodged a pretty significant bullet then.
Yeah, I don't know the exact nature of the injury, but I think it's considered minor, you know, given how that looked. I mean, you're right, it could have been something much, much worse.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you told us that, because that does change the complexion of what it looked like. Like, the way he went off the ice and the way he got to the bench, it looked like he could have just blown his knee out. So that would suggest Travis Dermott will just step in and likely be on that third pairing until Sandin returns. But I think what's become interesting here in the last couple of days is the shuffling of the pairings, with Liljegren moving up at times and playing with Muzzin, and then Hall getting more of a taste. And as we look towards, you know, the trade deadline, and it might be premature, but I'm not sure it is, that would be where I think they're going to attack, is that solidifying their top four. And I think I've believed Justin Hall is a third pairing defenseman really since he got to the league. I think you prefer Sandin, Hall, Liljegren, Dermott fighting it out for the 5 and 6 spots, and bring in a veteran, bring in someone you can play with Muzzin in a shutdown role. Could you see that being the case? Because I don't think Timothy Liljegren is in a position where he should be playing top 4 minutes right now.
Yeah, I think if you could circle an ideal situation, that's what they'd like to do. You know, and stop me if you've heard this before, that the cap is going to be a challenge.
Yep.
When they get to do that. And look, the Leafs traded away a ton of draft picks at last year's you know, trade deadline, and so they don't have as much capital to pull off a bigger move. And if we're talking about a top 4D, you know, it's probably a slightly bigger move than
CJ. To interrupt you, what do you think that does to a general manager when you I don't know if you want to use the term go all in, but when you just blow the first rounder on Foligno, I think you got 10 games out of him and one assist, and you lose. Does that make you gun shy, or how does that affect the general manager's psyche?
If I'm predicting with Kyle Dubas, I think I bet he doubles down. Like, I think that he really believes in the core group, which he said, you know, a number of times. He's been very consistent with what he thinks. You know, I think the on-ice results right now, and, you know, I know they lost the last two games on the weekend, but they look to be one of the top teams in the league based on pretty much any metric you're measuring by, whether it's old-school points or some of the newer shot-driven metrics. And so, you know, I think given that life is short, that every year you're talking about how do you keep this guy, how do you keep that guy. I mean, they've got a good team. I think he's going to do everything he can to try to win a Stanley Cup. You know, that's what Pittsburgh did forever, right? Like, Pittsburgh is getting to the end of this road where they have no prospects because they never were drafting any first rounders because they were trying to win the Cup every year. And you know, they hung 3 banners in their building, so that worked out pretty well as a strategy. The Leafs would give what they can to get one, but I think that they'll be aggressive, and you know, the hard part, and I haven't spoken with anyone in the Leafs about this, but I was talking to someone who works for another team yesterday, and he was saying their team needs help at the deadline, and they're like, there's, you know, they're counting on Ben Chiarot being there, you know, with the way Montreal season going. And he's like, beyond that, I don't really know. He's like, we went into this year thinking Josh Manson and Hampus Lindholm might be moved out of Anaheim, and the Ducks are having a pretty good year, so we'll wait to see, you know, how that might change their approach. You know, John Klingberg's another name, who's a pending UFA defenseman, but, you know, I'm not sure if that's going to be a fit for teams. And so, you know, as we get closer to March 21st, there'll be more names and there'll be more, you know, obvious targets. But, you know, the view around the league right now anyway is that it might be a tough year to get a defenseman unless you really like Ben Chiarot. And you know, beyond him, there's not a lot of names. So I don't know exactly who the fit would be for the Leafs, but I agree with the – the premise here that if you're looking to address an area, that that's the one to do it in.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider. So as you just mentioned on the show here, Rasmus Sandin, you're hearing 2 to 3 weeks. Spez is going to get games here. What was your reaction to the hit or the knee, whatever you want to call it or describe it as, on Pionk, and then the reaction when you heard this morning that the league offered him an in-person hearing, which allows the league to go 5+ games in suspension?
I was a little surprised by the potential here for 5+ games, to be honest, just because you don't see it a lot, and obviously we're not talking about a player with a long history of doing this, but, you know, where the issue is it's clearly a bad hit, and there's intent there, right? I mean, he's angry on the bench when Sandin gets kneed, and he's going out to exact some revenge, and it didn't go well. And so, you know, there's no guarantee, I guess, you know, just because you get an in-person hearing doesn't mean you will get 6 games as a suspension, but generally that's how it goes, unless he's able to present a strong case or introduce something that they maybe haven't considered into his decision-making or how everything went down. But, you know, I like where his heart's at. It's just the execution wasn't great. You know, we saw the game before in Minnesota, you know, Jack Campbell gets run over by Foligno, and there's, you know, no one is really addressing it in terms of defending him. It's a tough spot. That's late in the game, and it's a tie game. I get you don't want to take a penalty. That, you know, that would be equally bad, I suppose. But, you know, I like that Spezza wants to defend his teammates. I think it's impressive to me how important he is to this team, honestly, that 2 years ago, if we were doing a hit like this, that we might have been talking, like, is it time in the league up? You know, he's being scratched every other game by Mike Babcock, and you fast forward, and here he is, you know, having a big night offensively in Minnesota and being a sort of emotional leader in Winnipeg. But he's going to have to pay the price for that hit. I mean, I can't defend the hit.
No, it's a bad hit. It's a predatory hit. He knew who it was on. I don't think he does it if it's anyone else. Yeah. But you're right about Spezza and what he has represented. I mean, we're 25 games into the season, but as of now, if you asked me, do I think he's back next year, I would say yeah. Like, he's just played such a primary role on this team, and he has adjusted who he is and what he represents. I mean, he has not been known as a guy, he's not a fighter, he's not a guy that gets suspended, he's not an overly emotional player throughout his life or throughout his career, but it's developed. And I'm glad you brought up the Foligno on Campbell, because I wonder if that was a part of the Leaf reaction as well, based on what had happened the night before, and there was no retribution there. And then they get to Winnipeg, and Dubois doing what he's doing with Matthews, and Pionk does what he does with Sandin, and it was like Spezza, Simmons, Clifford, the three of them, Richie to an extent, they're like, this isn't going to happen. And I appreciate that. I think Sheldon Keefe appreciates it too.
Well, if you're game planning for the Leafs, and especially once we get talking about the more emotional games you get towards the playoffs, I mean, this is part of the game plan, right? Is you're assuming that they're not really going to offer much pushback in some of these areas. And so, you know, I don't think it was a coincidence in that game that the Winnipeg was trying to do that. They have some big, heavy players that, you know, can make it hard on the opposition. I think you're trying to sort of intimidate them. And so, you know, the Leafs are going to face this again down the road. I think they have to decide the best way to handle it, or if, you know, if they need more sandpaper. Obviously, they've kind of volleyed back and forth between approaches over these last few years about having those types of guys. That's why I wonder, you know, if they do go get a defenseman, say, at the deadline, if maybe you're looking at someone who's more like a Bogosian style that they had last year on the third pairing. I know that's not ideal, because then we're still talking about one of the guys you don't want in the top four being in the top four, but, you know, maybe that's, you know, an area that they can at least try to add a little bit more of a backbone, I guess.
Yeah, well, news just coming in, Neil Pionk has been suspended 2 games. So Pionk got 2 games for his knee-on-knee hit. Spezza, again, is going to have a hearing via Zoom that is going to take a little bit more time. I would suspect that will come down tomorrow. The Leafs play tomorrow night. I would expect that news probably comes down tomorrow, maybe later tonight. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, the Leafs, again, dealing with this. Spezza's going to be out. Sandin's going to be out. Marner, we don't really know the nature of the injury, but any reason to believe he'll be back tomorrow night?
Who's that, sorry?
Mitch Marner.
He might, but they're gonna be cautious. So
yeah.
You know, I don't know for sure if he's playing or if he isn't playing. I certainly don't think it's a long term situation, but you know, they may elect to give him another day or two here to recover.
Yeah, that makes some sense. All right, well, we'll see. We'll leave it there. Thank you for this, Chris. We'll do it again next week.
All right, guys. See ya.
There's Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider. yeah, Neil Pionk gets two games. We'll see on Jason Spezza. But yeah, it was a fun night last night. It was a wild night. I mean, ultimately, mm-hmm. you don't want to see people get injured or anything like that or suspended, but a little bit of life in the game every once in a while never hurt anybody.
Yeah, and I know the Spezza play, and I just have a hard time with the separation of the two. It's like Spezza's had a greasy look to it where he was kind of sliding down. He needed the guy in the head. But I don't know how this Pionk one, it just gets pushed aside as just, oh, it's like things that happen in hockey, but the Sandin kid can't play for 2 to 3 weeks. That's what I don't understand. And it's not pro leaf. It's just stuff happens in hockey, and we got to talk about it. And that's where I can't really find the difference. It's like, oh, it didn't look that mean, so you don't get that amount of time. I don't know. I find it weird, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we'll see what comes of the Spezza suspension. I think the big news out of that hit with CJ is that Rasmus Sandin, he's hearing it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks, which would suggest probably Charlie Horse. Like, those could be pretty nasty, but that was the best-case scenario if it was going to happen because of the nature of the hit and what it looked like. So take that for what it's worth. I think that's a win for the Leafs.